Hello and welcome to our UFC 330 post-fight show. I'm Ariel Helwani, and first things first, let me just say, I've missed you. We've missed you. Oh, how I've missed you. It's been two long weeks, more than two long weeks, since we've done all of this. So much has happened over the course of those 2.5 or so weeks, and we're going to leave all of that stuff, all of those pleasantries, all of that dilly-dallying for Monday's show. We'll have plenty of time to talk about everything that we missed, our vacations, my beautiful trip to Hawaii. If you thought I was annoying after Italy, just wait. Just wait to see how annoying I am after a beautiful trip to Hawaii. But we'll save that for Monday because we have very important things to talk about. UFC 330 just wrapped up seconds ago in the Illadelph, as the cool kids say, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. First time since 2019 that the UFC held an event there. That was a fight night event headlined by Justin Gaethje versus Edson Barboza in March of 2019. This time around, they come back with the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, Islam Makhachev, who makes history. 17 wins in a row for Islam Makhachev. He retains his welterweight title. As GC just said, if you were watching the post show and a tremendous job, the watch party, tremendous job by both GC and Rick. A, for the watch party, but B, for like actually doing it in those outfits for the entire time. I mean, the dedication to the bit. Primo, fifth fighter to defend a title in two different weight classes. Perhaps most importantly, in my opinion, 17th win in a row, breaking Anderson Silva's record, which was 16 wins in a row. He did not break any title defense records or anything like that. Dana White was kind of confused about those records throughout the week. But interestingly enough, same building that Anderson Silva beat Forrest Griffin way back when, UFC 101. Now, that was just a 205-pound fight, but it was one of his greatest performances ever. Same building, same city, of course. Here's Islam Makhachev against Ian Machado Gary in a fight that I think a lot of people were dismissive of Ian Machado Gary's chances in the fight, and it was looking very early on like it was going to be another Islam Makhachev masterclass, certainly after the first two rounds. But a funny thing happened in the third and fourth. Machado Gary got his confidence, figured out how to stand and trade with him, was defending takedowns. Islam was pretty much at about 50% throughout, and even when he did take him down, wasn't inflicting much damage. Fourth round, going to be very interesting to see how that would score. Now, ultimately, two judges gave it 49-46, 148-47. I suspect those judges who gave it 49-46 for Ian had that fourth round for Islam. I vehemently disagree with that, and I can't see anything here. Let me just, I see it up on the screen, but my eyesight is horrible. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm looking at it right now. I'm seeing fourth round to Islam, fourth round to Islam. Eric Colon is the only one to give it to Ian Machado Gary, and he was right. It was 2-2 going into the fifth. Now, on Twitter, I did say 10-8 round for Islam in the second round. A lot of people disagree with me, and so ultimately 2-2 going into the fifth. Ian said it afterwards, no complaints. I thought Ian was phenomenal in the fight. I thought the right man won, and I thought Ian, especially afterwards, was phenomenal as well on the microphone. That was the toughest fight of Islam Makhachev's career, certainly as a champion, since the fight 3 years ago against Alexander Volkanovski in Australia, which he alluded to one Joe Rogan after the fact. As you can see, I have missed doing this. I have missed talking, but I'm not here alone. Obviously, of course, when we do the post shows, Three-Pot comes together. And so first, let me just say hello to the man in the hat, a.k.a. the mayor of the Nutmeg State, Mr. Chuck Mininall is here. Chuck, how are you?
Ariel, you look positively radiant, my friend. It's good to have you back. It's very lonely here without you.
Thank you, Bretta. Thank you. I appreciate that. also, let's go. yes. Let's go across the pond to the one and only, the patron saint of the Emerald Isle, the host of the critically acclaimed podcast, The Crack, the one and only PT Carroll's here as well. Hello, PT. How are you? What is The Crack?
Slightly crestfallen. Thought Irish MMA was getting another world champion there. Right down to the wire in the fifth round. I thought it'd be close. I thought Islam would get the job done, but as you said, Ian Machado Gary, very, very good performance. After really everything going wrong in the first two rounds, right? He rallied back, got himself back into the fight. Two losses on his record, very narrow loss to Shavkat Rakhmonov and Islam Makhachev. not too bad. As he says himself, 28 years of age. I'm sure we're going to see this guy back here at some stage.
Oh, 100%. So let's dig a little bit deeper, guys. I don't know. This is maybe TMI. I'm not proud of it. But at 44 years of age, I'm still a nail biter. And if they were watching me in the control room as I was sitting here watching the fight, I bit off every single nail. I was so locked in on that fight, not because I was nervous, but I was just like so into every single thing that was happening. That was one of my favorite fights of the year so far. I don't know about fight of the year, but the drama, the theater, the comeback from Ian was phenomenal. Chuck, what did you see? What are you thinking in the immediate aftermath?
Now, did you start biting your nails when Ian finally started to come to life in this fight? Because that to me, it was like the thing, right? Like we're waiting to see if that's going to happen. He's playing almost like a nullification game to the best of extent he can. He's playing mostly defense. It almost felt like he was going to be like the co-main, a little bit where you might have regrets, you know, from the Jillian Anderson thing, Robertson, from that standpoint, that he wasn't throwing enough, like he wasn't doing enough. And then he comes to life, and we've talked about this many times, man. We're lucky when we get these kind of fights. This was very reminiscent of those big fights from the boom days, you know, of Anderson Silva and those types, GSP, and that there's a plot switch. And as that's happening, this becomes like an engrossing thing, a collective experience that I love when we enter into this sort of thing. So when that fourth round was playing out, it was just one of those, you know, you're having one of those moments. You're like, dude, is, you know, especially the fourth round, because the way it played out was just, it was very dramatic, and it really was almost nuanced to the point where you're like, okay, do I understand the scoring of this? Because if you understand the scoring and the damage and the kind of like you know, the criteria, you're like, well, I think that Ian Gary just tied this thing up. And when you get into those kinds of things heading into the fifth round, especially when you have a champion who's on the cusp of doing something like what Islam was doing there, just becoming like the fifth guy to defend in two different weight classes, dude, does it get better than that? I mean, I'm with you. I'm a nail biter too. If it's a good, if it just has enough things going for it, like the magnitude and all of the things playing, in the way that this one did, that was great. And it was almost, guys, it was almost a little bit like a symbolic feat. Like the fight played out symbolically, almost how's the perception of this fight played out, right? Like the perception of this fight was immediately like, Ian has no chance. This was what most people, why would he get it? Why not, you know, one of these other guys, whatever it was. Ian gets the shot. Perception kind of changes as we get, you know, closer to the fight. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, pretty soon people are like, well, I don't know, man. You know, Ian's got good defense. Maybe he does have a chance. You know what I mean? And then, like, they come back around. Oh, but Islam should win. And that's almost how this fight played out. Just like the people, like, when you contemplated it, it almost played out exactly like that. What could be better?
PT, I'll be honest, in the group chat, I said it about 2 hours ago. I said, I think Ian is going to win this. I was getting the impression all week long that Ian was supremely confident and that Islam was sort of not really giving him the respect that he deserves. There was this exchange yesterday, and sometimes we put too much stock into these things, but there was an exchange yesterday at the weigh-ins where Ian was like, this is the biggest fight. And he's like, it's not the biggest fight. He's like, it is the biggest fight. And they're sort of arguing about it. And obviously for Ian, it is. And for Islam, there was a lot at stake. There was history. And I just sort of felt like Ian was going to rise to the occasion. I think one of Ian's best attributes is his IQ. He's a very smart fighter. And I thought he did rise after feeling him out in those first two rounds. You've been watching him. I always like to talk about your history with Ian and covering him and watching him, because you've seen him truly evolve from amateur, debutante to here. To see him perform like that on these, you know, on these types of stages, on this grandest of stage, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, we've seen this from Ian before. He had a fight in Cork, and I can remember Cork being the South Ireland. And this was a big kind of homecoming for him, because he's had his debut in Cage Warriors. This was kind of his first fight back home. And the buzz around him from Team KF, since his amateur days, it was like, this is the next guy. This is going to be the next guy who's going to go the whole way in the UFC. He had that fight in Cork, and he got chin-checked by Figlak, who he fought that night. And it's one of those moments where you kind of find out about someone, right? Like, you can go either way when that happens. And he fought back and won the fight by submission. I was kind of thinking about that when he went down in the second round there. Like, this is, I'd be the last one to admit it. You know, I was poo-pooing all this Dagestan v. Ireland 2 bullshit that the UFC were pushing. But I was kind of like, it's kind of playing out like the fight with Khabib and Conor, in that Khabib kind of dominates grappling position in the first round. Then he gets a knockdown against a striker later on. Then the third round, Ian wins one back, but he managed to sustain that comeback and really make it a really intriguing contest right up until Islam got that takedown in the fifth round. And even at that, like, in the fourth round, the one that we're debating, I think we've all scored it for Ian because, right, Islam may have been in dominant position. He may be the one in the better position in the clinch, but Ian landed more damage. He was landing more shots. And as we've heard the looks of God, I'd say over the years, getting the position is its own reward if you aren't scoring from that position. So I think that's why we had it that way. But you say his IQ is his best gift. I also think his mentality of, you know, there's people screaming, fuck you, Ian Garry, after he gets knocked down in the second round. Like, this is a horrendous situation. Can you imagine being in that situation and somehow mounting this comeback? I think his self-belief, his inability to just stop believing in himself is like a special weapon for him. It's like a secret weapon. And we saw that at play tonight. And honestly, like, these are the best fighters in the world that have defeated him. Shavkat, the boogeyman of the division, and Islam, a guy who we're now going to be entering into the GOAT conversation based on everything I've heard on the broadcast tonight. These guys are beating him by inches. Really, really by inches when you look at those scorecards in the end and how it was scored. And right down to the fifth round, I'm with Eric Olin, but the way he scored it. But incredible. Incredible that he rallied in that situation, given the environment, given everyone wanting him to lose. Let's make no mistake about that. This is a very one-sided partisan crowd for Islam Makhachev in Philadelphia, a state that's famous for Irish diaspora. It's pretty incredible.
No, it really is. And I'm actually supremely impressed with both guys. I was thinking after the second round, which, by the way, anyone think I'm crazy for the 10-8? Was that just completely off? I mean, I'm no
they
judge.
They changed it again. Like, remember, they were like really emphasizing the 10-8s for a while, and then they kind of reeled it back a bit. So I understand the confusion.
I definitely started, didn't think you were crazy, though. I thought, I mean, you could make that case that it was a 10-8 for sure.
Dropped him, and then the damage afterwards. I know it started early on as a somewhat Ian round started, but I just thought that was a very significant moment in the fight. I was thinking after that round, Ian Garry is going to regret this because he had to work so hard just to get this title shot. Of course, let's not forget about all the drama with the matchroom stuff. I'm sure that doesn't help. Although I heard that there were no issues this week. Frank Smith was there, all that stuff and more. But let's be honest, there's like a pretty good queue of fresh opponents for Islam Makhachev to face. Two of them were in attendance. We're going to talk about those two guys in a moment, Michael Morales and Carlos Prates. Those are very juicy, fun matchups. Like, he is going to... We saw what happened with Jillian Robertson, and I think Jillian Robertson is going to regret her performance against Mackenzie Dern. Mackenzie Dern, spoiler, won the fight rather convincingly. Back end wasn't great, but point is, she's going to regret that performance. And I was feeling like Ian was going to regret his performance. And you were starting to feel like his corner was getting frustrated with him as well. And so to see him come out in the third and kind of figure it out and fight the way in which he did in the third and fourth, I give him a lot of credit for that post-fight interview. In the post-fight interview, he was very complimentary of Khabib, of the team, almost in a way like too complimentary, but it doesn't seem like he's going to have regrets. What do you think, Chuck? Do you think he should be regretful? Because I think it's going to be a while before he gets back in this position, just when you consider Carlos, Michael, Shavkat eventually is going to come back. And I know he has, you know, a history with some of these guys. I just think they're not going to rush to put him back in there, even though this was such a great, fun fight. I would love to see it again down the line if Islam is still a champion. I just didn't want him to leave anything, you know, on the table, so to speak. I wonder if when the dust settles, he will feel that way.
I don't think so, man. I mean, I'm with Pizzi when he's up there and he's basically saying, his grasp of his situation in the big picture is very impressive. And we've been saying this a couple of times. You know, there was like this groundswell about like who he is and, you know, everything that was going on in his private life. But over the last couple of fights, he just keeps emerging. But in that post-fight, you know, interview, he's basically saying, I'm 28 years old. You know, and he's pointing to guys very rationally, you know, very clear-headed, like who are 38 and winning titles. And he's like, I got 10 years. You know what I mean? I'm going to learn from this. I'll be back stronger. I mean, it's hard to kind of be that rational in that kind of moment. And I thought he was extremely rational, not just there, but just kind of in the fight week. And did you see his calm kind of going into that environment? Like Pizzi was mentioning, you know, he's kind of being treated as public enemy number one there. Crowd's definitely not on his side, but his self-belief was transformative in a weird way because he was just, completely calm, completely within himself. And when he started to figure it out, you know, and they were mentioning this on the broadcast where he's like, he's gaining, right? Like he's building, and you see him hit those body shots and you could kind of feel it. You could kind of see it. And I was like, dude, this guy, like he is wired different. And I think it's very important to remember yes, there are contenders in that division, but at 28 years old, I feel as convinced as I've ever felt about a guy like this, that he'll be back. He'll be in that same situation. I don't know how long it'll take, but he will be there. That type of mentality with his talent and his kind of IQ and adaptability and everything that he's doing with his coaches. And you could tell that Damian Maia, like you could just tell that, like, yeah, it's like, you can tell that he has all of this working for him. He'll be back.
Okay. So on the flip side, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to ask you guys, do you think the record played on Islam at all coming into this week? Do you think it added to the stress in there for him? Because the credit we're giving Gary must be given back to Islam in the fifth round. The panic, like, I felt genuine panic, right, in Islam's corner in the fourth with Habib telling him, we need to win this round. In the fourth, we need to win this round. And as we saw it, I know two of the judges didn't have it this way, but we come out of that round thinking Gary's won that one as well. For Islam to come back out there and get the takedown in the fifth, even though we kind of seemed like his best takedowns were behind him in this fight, I think that's incredibly impressive, seeing out the fight in that way. But what I was going to ask is do you think Islam was affected by this history in the lead up to this fight, Ariel?
I don't really think so. I don't think it was made out to be that big of a deal. Like, this wasn't,
title defense or something.
Well, you won't get the reference, but like, it didn't feel like it was Cal Ripken breaking Lou Gehrig's record. I don't feel like the UFC made it out. I think that it was Iron Man. It's a long story. Point is, I feel like they could have used this as part of the promotion. Like, if you weren't paying attention, you probably would have missed it, that this was a thing, that the most wins in a row streak was on the line, that he was tied with the great Anderson Silva. It was interesting that Ian Gary seemed to have said something to Anderson. I don't speak Portuguese, but maybe he said, I'm sorry that I couldn't stop him. I don't know. I think it's a combo of maybe he didn't have the most amount of respect for maybe, or if it's like, I don't know, maybe it's different at 170. I think we were so blown away by how he looked against Jack Della. By the way, let me be very clear here. That was an amazing performance. Like, he looked great in the first two rounds. I thought the second round was a potential 10-8. And then, you know, third round was probably his worst round. Fourth round, clearly two of the judges gave it to him. I don't agree. And then he comes back and he rallies, busted up, and wins the fifth. So I'm not taking anything away from Islam whatsoever. I do think there's a strong case to be made that he is among the greatest of all time. I still think, like, that was his seventh victory in a title fight, his sixth title defense. A reminder that John Jones had 16 title fight victories. DJ's record is 12 in a row as far as title defenses are concerned. And so while he did surpass Anderson's record, I still think there's a little bit more work to be done. He did tie Khabib's victory record, 29 wins. He does have the loss against Adriano Martins. So these are things that are all adding up. I don't think he is the GOAT per se. I don't even think that matters. What he's doing at 155 and now 170 is incredible. But it does, like, Chuck, let me ask you, does it not, like, you see Morales there? I know they're different fighters. And I know Morales is a judo guy, and he's a really big 170-pounder. And Carlos is a pretty damn big 170-pounder as well. And he looked amazing against Jack Della, who, of course, is some beat. But does it not give you a little bit of pause that, like, you know what? It's not going to be as easy as he gets older, of course, as the body, you know, like, continues to take this damage throughout fights. It's not going to be the easiest ride for him. Like, he's not, like, these next few title defenses are really going to tell us who Islam Makhachev is, in my opinion.
100%. And if you were to say what would be his hardest, like, in this fight, like, before this fight, he's fighting, he's going to defend, who's going to be the hardest? Probably you would have played, I don't know, would you have placed Ian Gary? I probably would have put Morales as harder in the sense of his, how big he was and all of the things you're talking about, but you probably wouldn't have had Ian Gary. But to see Ian Gary come out there and I guess put some tape out there on how to maybe, like, do some things. And now you're talking about these two monsters that are in attendance and they're waiting out there. When you were talking about, like, the whole Anderson Silva thing and his legacy, like, where he's at and GOAT talks and all this, I mean, if he's got it set up now, if he wants to actually take that throne, like, he can leave no doubt, right? If he goes through those types of guys, in his new weight class. I mean, to me, that would be phenomenal, because these are, in each one of these cases now, you're going to be like, well, I don't know, can Islam beat this? There's going to be big doubts. A lot of the times when you're talking about John Jones, Anderson Silva, they were, and JSP, they were so kind of above the, you know, above the playing field that almost every matchup you felt like would have to be an enormous upset to see them go down. You know what I mean? And maybe toward the end things started getting different, but dude, Makhachev, like right now, those fights look like huge impositions. You know what I mean? They just look like huge roadblocks in his way. So if he's able to kind of defend that belt a couple of more times, I mean, he'll make himself undeniably in that GOAT space, right?
Yes. Oh, 100%. Especially against this Murderers Row coming up. I know they're not the most like proven title contenders, but they are damn good fighters. And so both of them were right there, Petey. There was a note from someone, I think it was Nolan King of MMA Junkie, who tweeted that there was a camera on Carlos Prachez throughout the entire fight. And usually that's an indication that they're trying to set something up. He was wearing a t-shirt that said, "I'm next." But then at the end, they gave us the split screen with Morales and there it is right over there, the t-shirt. They gave us the split screen with Morales and Prachez. And so what are you feeling right now? Prachez continues to allude to the fact that he's had conversations. I know he was in Vegas. His manager took a picture, and Prachez did with Hunter Campbell this week. Worth noting, Morales was the backup fighter. He did weigh in yesterday. That's not always an indication that you are next. But if you were the UFC, which way are you going?
I think we've kind of answered it insofar as the information we've been giving us all indicates that it's probably Prachez next. I personally am more interested in the Morales fight. Especially after tonight as well. Morales' size is such a weird situation for Islam to deal with. We saw tonight how Ian did. Ian is a very tall welterweight. I wouldn't say he is the most substantial welterweight in terms of weight. You know, he does not cut an awful lot of weight. He doesn't put on an awful lot of weight after he weighs in. Morales, on the other hand, he looks like a light heavyweight and he's in there. I'm really intrigued as to how Islam would deal with his explosivity, which he most certainly has, and his sheer size, his judo background, which makes it more difficult to take him down as well. Of course, Ian has a judo background as well. But that, for me, is the big question, because I felt as though Gary has kind of given the blueprint on Prachez in the way he fought him up until the fifth round, of course, when Prachez had a lot of success. Ian fought him masterfully well. For me, the more interesting fight is Morales, but I do believe that they're going with Prachez.
Chuck?
Yeah. I think that because Morales is so much younger, too, like you can afford to leave. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if the UFC follows this kind of script, but like he is a younger guy who still could have another big showcase moment. But dude, how long will Islam be out? You know, that's the other question here. And will a guy like Morales, I mean, I could see Prachez because he's a little longer in the tooth, like saying like, you know, I want my next one to be this. It would make more sense in that. But Morales, that's a long time for him to be off, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but I feel like he would. Yeah. I mean, it might be a while.
Dude, Morales' last fight was in November.
I know, like, man.
He's got to fight. I mean, honestly, I would love to see Morales versus Shavkat. I feel like it would be tough to give Shavkat the title shot. There's no momentum whatsoever. And I know you're killing off a contender, but like, what are you going to do? I think Prachez just fought against Jack Della, so the timing works out a little bit. I know it was 3 months ago. Morales' last fight was in November. What's he going to wait a year and a half at this stage of his career to get a title shot? I mean, I feel like a lot of fans don't even remember his last fight anymore. Yes, it was a great win over Sean Brady, which, by the way, at the time, Dana White did kind of say it was a number one contender fight, if you recall.
We all say things.
I feel like based on the clues, based on the pictures with Hunter Campbell, all that stuff, that's the direction they're going towards. And I'm really I'm very curious now to see, these guys are going to be confident afterwards, right? Like after watching this, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, Islam at 170, this is not the same type of puzzle. I think it's only going to make their confidence grow. And by the way, one or two fights, I'd love to see Ian get another crack if Islam is still the champion. Like, as he said, 28. Look, think about the fact, I know I'm jumping around here, but like the last time the UFC was in Philadelphia, the main event was Justin Gaethje versus Edson Barboza. Edson Barboza retired tonight, looked very, very old, but is an unbelievable fighter. Justin Gaethje is the lightweight champion of the world, the undisputed lightweight champion of the world. That's wow. 7 years ago. Like the juxtaposition of these two careers is crazy. And so all to say, like, people lose. People GSP lost his first title fight, for goodness sakes, against Matt Hughes, and came back and won the belt and had one of the all-time great careers. So a lot is going to change. A lot could happen with Ian. And I think he had – I was watching him – and he's blowing kisses to his wife and kid. And I was like, Ian, please, this is your chance, man. You worked so hard. By the way, that's worth noting, Dana White is at the press conference right now. This is a quote from Aaron Bronstetter, who does a great job of recapping Dana's thoughts. White says that if Machado Gary, this is the tweet, had even an ounce of killer instinct, he could have won. Did not like how cordial the fighters were with each other. Feels Ian will regret his approach when he watches it back.
Well, so, listen, Roy. Okay, here, hang on. Is this, Roy, you say it's all gone well with the matchroom thing, but I think we're entering a very interesting time in terms of...
Well, by the way, when I say gone well, I mean, like, there were no fist fights. I'm just saying, I was wondering...
That's...
you know?
Well, I think we're entering a very interesting time in terms of what impact... Yeah. has it had on Tom Aspinall, on Ian Gary signing for Matchroom Talent Agency. If Ian had a won tonight, you would have had more leverage. Ian, I think, in his position, right, we saw it after the loss to Shavkat. Like, he was actively calling out people left, right, and center. He wanted to get back in there, get back in the win column as soon as possible. I'd imagine he'll want to do the same thing. Provided he's not injured or anything like that, he'll want to get in there as soon as possible. We're talking about... Pratchez is probably next in line for Islam. So, is there any way that the UFC would match him with Morales to bleed him into the title situation? And if not, have a second run around with Ian? But I always remember when you had Ian on the show last, you were asking about the list of contenders, and he was talking about he beat all these guys. And I absolutely believe that he believes that. But when it got to Morales, he was saying he needs to move up to middleweight. That suggests to me that he can see a bit of trouble with this guy too. So is there any way that with this new matchroom situation, the UFC give him the bum steer and they say, oh, you fight the dude that everyone is terrified of, the guy who's at a loose end, Mr. Michael Morales?
Okay, well, two things to say about that. Number one, how's the matchroom thing going? Well, let's see. Tom Aspinall has said that he'd like to fight in Paris. He ain't fighting in Paris. Then it seemed like Abu Dhabi was the next slot. Yeah. He ain't fighting in Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. They announced that card today. And so is he going to fight at MSG? Are they going to give him that honor? We'll see. So I don't think it's going very well. And yeah, we'll see how it affects Ian moving forward. There was just a clip that was posted seconds ago on Twitter. I believe it was via Full Send MMA, where it's Ian and Michael Morales talking to each other backstage, and Ian is like, yo, man, I don't know why you keep talking shit about me. We never had an interaction in the past. You keep talking these things. Good luck to you. Do your thing. Stop talking shit. I feel like that's the seed. And so, yeah, that could make a lot of sense right there. Like, it seems like there's some tension. Morales is a freaking beast of a guy. Maybe that's the seed. I don't know what you do with Shavkat. He's the big question mark, because you can't have him just, like, go all the way to the back of the line. I don't think that's fair. He beat these guys. Like, he's still undefeated and all that stuff. But we're going to see. Look, Dana's comments, he's continuing, by the way. He's saying, White says Makhachev controlled Gary and shut him down. He did exactly what he needed to do. He says that Ian is a classy guy. This is, again, courtesy of Aaron Bronstetter's tweets. But when the fight starts, he needs to flip the switch. So it's not like Dana is coming out here and saying, like, I was blown away. What a performance. It was razor thin. He's kind of showing his cards a little bit, in my opinion, based on, you know, what is being written about right here.
Yeah. I thought Pizzi was going to answer this.
No, it's okay. I'm just throwing it up. Okay. I'm very interested
in this whole thing. Because, look, from my position, Ian had the promotional rocket ship strapped to his back. I thought he was... It made way more sense for Tom to sign with Eddie Hearn, given what happened in the GAN fight and given Dana's reaction to it, than it did for Ian for me. Not to say it's not a good move. I think he had that great media day, and that did him a lot of favors here. He was back in the news cycle here. He had 100 fans waiting for him to sign things. Like, that went down really well. But these guys are giving up something if they align with Dana White's most vocal nemesis in years, you know, even though they both are saying, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It certainly seems to be. So I'm really, really intrigued. And as we see,
we see
the white smoke from Atherton there, Tom Aspinall ready to go. Something has to give.
Yeah, well, that's why, by the way, I was thinking, like, man, he's going to regret this because it's going to be a long-ass time before he gets put in this position again. I thought he did enough. I thought he did enough by the end to put himself in a position where you're like, okay, this guy's a true contender. This is what we want to see out of him. This is the type of fight that I don't know. I'm seeing a lot of talk online that people hated the fight, so maybe I'm completely wrong here. I really enjoyed that.
I enjoyed it too, man.
That was not DDP Khamzat. That was not Islam JDM. That was riveting stuff. Yes.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you got like quintessential Islam, right? Right. Like you kind of saw everything that he does in that one fight. I mean, that second round, I was about to say, you brought up that Philadelphia thing with the virtuoso performance of Anderson Silva in his second fight up a weight class, you know, against Forrest Griffin. When he catches him with that head kick, didn't you get that feeling? Oh my God, Philadelphia is going to see another crazy ass performance, like some crazy. Like it came out of nowhere because that it was kind of like it was a little bit like contested up until that point, and then it was like boom, it opens up, and from that point on, man, I thought it was tremendous theater. Let me ask you guys this though: I wrote about this a little bit. Makhachev to me, he strikes me as like the okay. So like we've been in a UFC that has always had some kind of dominant champion, a guy who looks right on the poster. It's a guy that like basically when they're pointing out like, you know, Islam gets introduced to Philadelphia and everybody cheers. It doesn't matter where he's from, like everybody because they like he's that champion, right? He's a guy who's breaking records, could be considered the GOAT. They feel historic being in the building watching him do this, right? Like we're this close to him like slipping out of that position, and then what would the UFC have? I think it would be the first time that the UFC would not really have like one of those types of champions at the top. If you went down from all the weight classes, it would be like the first time that, you know, kind of guys who've either been proven like their invincibility has been proven or they've you know, whatever it is, their journeys have been through all kinds of things and now they're there, but like you would not have that guy anymore. That just is that traditional champion. It was that's what was going through my mind in that fifth round. I was like, dude, we might be in the like truly in a world of parity at this point, where it's just like any given, you know, Saturday, somebody can upset somebody, you know, which it would be a different terrain. So I felt like there was something preserved in the end when Makhachev got his hand raised, and that's what I don't know. There was something about that was kind of cool because now we're talking about, you know, these potential fights with Prochus and Morales, and they feel much bigger because he did it. He's on to the next level, and we've never seen people hitting these levels, you know? So I feel like that's something the UFC just doesn't have a lot of right now.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. Parity is the word. Also, I don't know if this has ever been the case, but as of right now, there's only one champion, male or female, in their 20s, and that's Joshua Van, 24. Had Ian won, that would have been the second one. Everyone else is like, there's dudes 38, 35, 36, McKenzie is 33. So not only is there a lot of parity and there's not a lot of dominance, I feel like the young guns, we're not seeing those, like, you know, obviously John was a special one, but even GSP back in the day and stuff like that, like we're not seeing people come in and then go DJ on these long runs as champions. So I don't know what it says about the sport, what it says about the product, what it says about the athletes, but it's definitely interesting. And I felt, I don't know if you guys felt this way, but I felt like this particular week, Islam kind of really came into his own as a superstar. Yeah. Like the interviews, the videos of him talking about like his famous lines and memes, like it kind of just feels like he gets it. I never felt like Islam had the same aura as Khabib. He didn't have the same mic skills. He didn't have the same lines. He didn't have the same sort of presence. This week, I felt like he had it. Do you know what I mean, Pete? Do you agree? Like, it just felt a little bit different this week.
Well, I tell you, I think that was kind of assisted by the public's attitude towards Gary. It made it easier for him, right? Like he doesn't really need to win these people over. Like, they're already kind of naturally on his side. I noticed at the press conference, he's kind of like, that was his whole tone to it. Like, he was misunderstanding what Gary was trying to say during that Abdul-Namap thing. And he was saying, shut up, and they're all going crazy. And then afterwards, he's kind of saying, he's talking to the UFC cameras like, oh, this guy can't get any fans. I think leaning into that kind of helped him too. I think that made him come across like this sensation. And as Chuck said earlier, a guy from Dagestan just being treated like a hero in Philadelphia is absolutely incredible. I do feel like this is the first time we got the playful side of him that we used to love with Khabib. you know, when Habib, like people would be saying the lines, like, you know, remember they used to have him reacting to the movies, the various rom-coms and things like this, they'd be doing that kind of content with him. That I agree with you. That was the kind of Islam we got this week, and we haven't really seen that before.
By the way, speaking of Abdulmanap, what about this stat, this factoid? This is from ESPN MMA. I haven't verified it. I suspect they're right. The combined record of Team Khabib, which they're picking Usman Nurmagomedov, Islam Makhachev, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Chanko, and Umar Nurmagomedov, 109-2, their combined record. That is an unbelievable legacy. And there's other guys, but they're just picking those particular five.
I legit didn't think they'd let Umar back into the sauna after that that loss, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the two losses, the title fight against Marab and the Adriano Martins, unbelievable.
You should have a couple on there, in my opinion, but we won't get into that. That's not what
they're doing. By the way, speaking of, like, I feel we haven't had a chance to talk about any of this. Usman is like signed, sealed, and delivered, right? Like there is no free.
I mean, they showed him on the.
Yeah, they showed him on there. Interesting.
Doesn't seem uncomfortable.
Bellator champion. I thought they'd go with the dig, but maybe they don't want to put them over and say current PFL lightweight champion. They had him fonted as last Bellator lightweight champion. I felt like from the moment he won that fight and got on the microphone and said, you know, Jake Paul likes to say Dana doesn't pay. Let's see if he pays. I was like, you're reading off the Ali Abdelaziz script. And this is Ali's dream. This is Ali's dream. He could say, Dana, here he is. F that Jake Paul, that Benedict Arnold who turned his back on you and all this stuff. I don't even know. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to stab them in the back.
Ali wouldn't do this.
Here he is for you. Usman is signed, sealed, and delivered. Hey, it is fait accompli, as they say in the business. It is fait accompli. He is signed. I don't know what they're waiting for. Do it now. Just make the announcement now. That's what I feel, and that's with actually like very little inside knowledge. It just seems so obvious.
Are they gonna wait? Are they gonna make Ali's boys go against you to put a Gaethje against Usman? Are they gonna let things play out a bit? That's interesting in itself.
It hasn't happened often. It's true.
By the way, do you think that Adriano Martins is like feeling like the 72 Dolphins at this point each time? You know, like each time he keeps...
Yeah, you know, he wants to be the only one. That's right.
He wants to be the only guy, right? Whoever pulled off the trick of beating the great Islam Makhachev. I mean, I always wonder about that sort of thing when you have a guy who's like, he's part of the trivia question, you know? Like, he was the one who beat him.
Who is... Like, what's the equivalent to Adriano Martins? And by the way, does the Adriano Martins loss affect the... Like, if that loss didn't happen and he was now 30-0, would he be the GOAT right now?
It would help, you know, that the mystique around Habib 30-0, Mayweather 50-0, all that kind of stuff. Is he Buster Douglas, Adriano Martins?
No, because that happened when Tyson was his peak.
That's fair.
That loss was not like a seismic loss at the time. It was just a thing that happened. I was like, oh wow, that was kind of shocking. I'm sure he was the favorite and all that, and we knew he was the disciple of Habib. But it's just such a weird one, right? Like,
I know.
Is it Anderson Silva Rio Chonan? That's what it is, right?
Something like that, like the flying scissor thing, whatever. Yeah,
remember that one? Or Okami, right? Wasn't the Okami?
Okami beat him right before he came to the UFC.
But that was the weird upkick. Yeah. It might have been the Chonan one where it was like, this actually happened. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like he went on you know what? I'm going with Chonan. I've decided I'm going with Chonan.
You know who could catch up is you were talking to Saul Kild and he was talking about that kid who beat him. He kind of sees it around his hometown there. I mean, that could end up being something like this too.
This is great. We're doing a whole refresher on the last 2 weeks. This is amazing. We're just gelling in. What a win for Saul.
By the way, for a second I was like, what does Saul Kild have to do with it? No, I know what you're talking about. He has at the other gym that he sees. Yes, that's a great one.
You know I drag left field into the show, man. Come on.
No, I love that. How I missed all of this. How I missed it so much. Usually I'm actually super tired, by the way, but I don't know if you guys know this, but
you're genuinely
Hawaii
glowing.
Is 6 hours back, so I could go for it.
I've never seen
hours.
You take on so much color, by the way, man. You're like, it's crazy.
Well, it's been 2 weeks, guys. It's been 2 weeks, plus the Knicks are champions. I don't know if you guys know
this. This is probably, there's no way you've even made it through like a tenth of your, like all of your new gear. I feel like you're still still pulling tags off of that shit. Like
1,000%. If I decide to wear only Knicks merch from now until December 31st, it will be just one outfit a day. Like I will not go through anything twice. This is a new one. This is
a awesome postman one. Fucking cool. Hates you, Elwani.
No.
Postman open your gaff every day with packages every day. Still sending shit, I'd say.
Still haven't gotten everything, by the way. Just want to let you know. Still waiting on a few items.
Now that you're back,
by the
way. I mean, you can get back.
Right? I'm not calling anyone out. There was a whole freaking thing that happened last time, but you know, a bit of a problem. Okay, we talked a lot about the main event. Shall we talk about the co-main event? What about Mackenzie Dern? She defeats Jillian Robertson. People weren't happy with this fight. PT, tell me what you thought, because there was a lot of talk going in, the submissions, the jiu-jitsu. Oh, she's a BJJ jiu-jitsu player. I'm an MMA jiu-jitsu player. I got the more subs. I got this and that. And in the end, it didn't feel like there was much of a test that was presented to Mackenzie. Now, as the broadcast team did state, like they did say, like, you don't want to end the fight the way in which Mackenzie looked towards the end, but I don't know if she just sort of like stopped caring. I don't know. What did you make of all of this? There's the scorecard right there.
Yeah, I guess I kind of agreed. My sentiment about this fight was Robertson and Dern's jiu-jitsu would cancel each other out. I did think Dern was a better jiu-jitsu player than Jillian, but I just felt as though when they'd fight, it would cancel each other out and it would play out on the feet, which could make it very exciting, because we've seen Dern get in kind of rough spots, right, in the striking before. Early on, his striking looked very good. In the exchanges, Robertson really wasn't at the races there. And then when it hit the ground, she showed levels, like tremendous levels. I think I gave Robertson more credit. I thought she'd be able to handle what Dern was bringing to the table, but over four rounds, she just couldn't. I agree with the lads on the broadcast. Jillian won the last round. It's not the way you want to go out, essentially, but really, I think Dern looked much improved again. I don't think she'd beat Wiley if she decided to come back to that division and wanted a fight, but she looked much improved and she very much deserved to win the fight.
What do you think, Chuck?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I was prepared almost to like eat some crow, because I've been one of those people, especially in our rankings and stuff, when you're mentioning, you know, Dern in the top 10 women's pound for pound list, you'll say things like, you know, she should take as many pictures as she can with the belt because it might be a short lived type thing. And I mean, you're trying to be a little bit funny, but there's a little bit of truth to this, you know, like you're like, I just don't know if she's on caliber of other champions. And obviously this follows her into this fight. I was ready to eat some crow. Like the first round or two, when she was just the pace she was putting on, just kind of destroying, you know, Robertson all over the place, especially on the feet. Like I thought she was, you know, lighting her up there, and it just looked like I was like, okay, this version of Mackenzie Dern looks like the best we've seen. But then it started to become, I guess that the narrative of that fight became, where's Jillian? When is she going to try? Where's she showing up? You'd hear her corner pleading with her. And I think that it was just because she didn't show any kind of like path to victory, any kind of hope to a path to victory, that it lost some steam somewhere. And then, like the way the fight ends is why it glares at you. Cause you're like, well, come on, Dern, you know, your leaps and bounds above this competitor, you should be able to defeat. You've shown that you can dominate, but you can't finish the fight strong and you can't put her away. And I mean, that's going to be tough. So I thought Dern was doing great up until, you know, it started to plateau for her. And now I walk away a little bit with a complicated feeling on her. I thought she looked good for the most part, Dern. I thought she probably looked better than she has in pockets of that fight, maybe ever. But, you know, that those optics do matter in the end, because I think, you know, you just mentioned Zhang Weili. Like if she goes in, who are you guys picking in that fight?
Absolutely,
you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people still think that Zhang is the number one strawweight in the world, one of the best female fighters in the world. Women's MMA is just having like a rough time right now, but there's, I think there's things to be excited about. Fatima Klein was out there saying like, I'm going to save the strawweight division.
She may well do it.
Big fans of her. That's
Frank has been saying since day one.
He's been on that bandwagon. If you were here, I don't know where he is. He's gallivanting around the Brooklyn music scene tonight, I'm told. But if you were here, he would co-sign that. That's a big-time fight. And that's the fight that I think we all thought we were going to get in the summertime. It didn't go down that way. I think Mackenzie's still a very, very good fighter. But until she beats Zhang, it's always going to feel like a somewhat interim title, if you will. Because let's be honest, Zhang had no reason to give up that belt. Like, she moved up. She didn't have to vacate the title. I still think that's a bit of a silly thing that the UFC does at times. And so it's going to feel like, if you're a pro wrestling fan, it feels like Chelsea Green with her title, if you get what I'm saying. And that's not trying to take anything away from her. That's just, I think, something that the fans sort of view as like, yeah, we know that this person over here is really, really good. You haven't beaten her yet, so we're not going to like give you that full respect. That being said, I think Mackenzie is popular. People are fans of hers. She has a fun style. I didn't hate the fight. I think it was, you know, I think it was more like, to me, impressive that Mackenzie was able to neutralize everything that Jillian tried to do, was able to be so dominant. And I kind of liked the spiciness at the end, by the way. Like, she was not giving her any love, any credit, any respect. Like, she was not doing what Ian did to Islam or even to Khabib and the team. Like, she was like, yeah, everyone's kind of good at jiu-jitsu. And like, you know what I mean? Like, Rogan kind of gave her a few chances to sort of bury the hatchet. And I felt like she didn't want to take those opportunities in any way, shape, or form. So I didn't hate it, but it just feels like there's a sentiment right now with regards to women's MMA where at least the fans online, the vocal ones, the vocal minority, just they're not loving it. And I think that's going to change. I'm not here to say that they should be getting rid of any weight classes or champions or anything like that, but it just kind of feels like that was just another one for them to say, like, you see, this is what we're talking about.
Was Chelsea Green the one who won the ladder match at
Yes.
Okay.
And she broke her orbital, but it was an interim belt. It was a whole thing.
I was there, by the way. I know you guys weren't around,
but
I was there. So I just was pointing it out. I mean, it was you were in Hawaii, I was in Minneapolis. I mean, they get compared a lot. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. As you can tell by my moon face, I was in Minneapolis.
No, you look fantastic. You're glowing as well. I was gonna say, PT, you too. There's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to catch up on. But we're gonna stick to 3:30. So yes, obviously it's going to be Mackenzie versus Jar. By the way, if it's not, who the heck is it? Like, is there a chance that Zhang Weili is just going to go out and do more of that modeling stuff that she's doing? Like, who the hell is there for her to fight if it's not Zhang Weili next? It has to be, right? Zhang, Virna Zhangiroba, Tatiana Suarez, Yan Xiaonan, Fatima Klein, 6.
Yeah.
There it is.
Fatima.
All right.
It just takes so long to make a division matter. When someone as big as Zhang leaves without losing, right? She lost to Shevchenko in a different weight class. And we're seeing a heavyweight now, right? Like, when it doesn't change hands, it leaves everybody with these feelings like, oh, well, what would have happened if they had made this fight? So it's on the UFC to make it happen.
Yeah. So let's see. Let me run down the rest of the results, and then we could talk about, certain things that kind of caught our eye. What about Jalen Turner? A 39-second knockout win over Caio Fernandez. This is a guy who not that long ago retired and was very emotional afterwards. And since then has come back and won 2 fights and looked great. And you know, it was, at least to me, almost more impressive than the knockout itself. It was like the intensity on his face. Did you see the look on his face?
Yes.
Not that look, not the smile. It looked like when he was walking around after that knockout, it looked like he was like possessed. He's usually the big smiley guy. He's usually very happy. It looked like he was possessed. This version of Jalen Turner to me is supremely impressive. I'm very, very excited to see how
he meant business, man. He meant business. Yeah. And I tell you what, maybe we should all retire for like 2 or 3 months, you know, and then come back as strong as him, you know, 2 weeks, whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was
impressive though, man.
At the end of last year, I had Mansoor Abdul Malik as one of my like can't miss. This guy is a future title contender, and that may still be the case. Again, people lose all the time, but all of a sudden, he's losing to Dustin Stoltzfus, which, let's be honest, like, this isn't a fight that he's losing this time last year, in my opinion. What the hell? This was an unbelievable win for Dustin, who's a Pennsylvania guy, wins via second round rear naked choke. Just incredible, shocking stuff. Dustin was phenomenal on the microphone afterwards, so likable, saying, hey, I'm just a regular guy. This is all a bit weird to me that I'm getting to fight here in front of all of you. But I was shocked, PT. I was absolutely shocked by the result for Mansoor. Like, I did not see this coming. I was so high on him not that long ago, and now all of a sudden it seems like he needs to figure out a few things.
Well, Stoltzfus kind of gave us the reason why we're so shocked. He is, you know, compared to someone like Mansoor, like, he is an ordinary guy, as far as we're concerned. We think that he should be ran through. I'm off the hype train completely now. It's 2 losses in a row, 2 bad losses, to be fair. He has a lot to do to be kind of considered the future of the division, where he was at. I was in agreement with you probably at the end of last year. I think he had a fight that December. We're all very, very impressed. I'm as turned off by what I've seen the last two as I was beforehand in terms of being enthusiastic about him. I think he has to rebuild from the ground up here. And I think a lot of fans are going to think that. Like, you see, you saw a lot of heavy favorites go down tonight, but I did not expect him.
Yeah, it seemed like they're setting up the Pennsylvania guys to get slaughtered.
Yes.
You know? And both of, like, the two biggest underdogs came through. But that was, I did not see that coming, man. I mean, it was almost, that was almost like a whole different fighter we were watching. Like, totally different determination. That was very strange to watch. And, I mean, I'm with you on, like, I love his post-fight where he's just like, you know, it's almost Rocky-esque. I know they're in Philadelphia, but it's like, you know, I'm not even supposed to be competing in here. And here I am having a fight, like this kind of fight. So,
yeah, it was great.
Kind of cool to see that, man.
He was an underdog, a plus 475 underdog. Mansoor was a minus 700 favorite. That's now two in a row as far as losses are concerned for Mansoor, who I think will be back as well, but did not see this coming. And he is 28, Dustin 34. What about Esteban Ribovic defeating Edson Barbosa in the second round? It looked like they were maybe going to stop the fight in between the first and second. This one kind of made me a little bit sad. Edson's been around. It's always the case with these guys who are there. Like, I remember being at UFC 123. I remember being there, Palace of Auburn Hills. That was the night Jose Aldo got the belt, the featherweight title. That's Rampage versus Machida, his debut against Mike Lulo. Obviously, the Terry Edom fight. I was not in attendance for that one. That was in Brazil, UFC 142. But this is a guy who just feels like he's been a staple, a fixture of the UFC, you know, for what, 16 or so years? And still in unbelievable shape. Holy crap. Like a 10-pack he's sporting over there. But just didn't see, you know, obviously, Father Time undefeated. And to see the emotion, people upset he didn't get a video. Who gives a crap? They gave him his moment. He got to put the gloves in the middle of the cage. He was very emotional. It was, I felt emotion. Like Edson's always been a class guy, and it's just sad to see the guys from that era finally call it a day. It always gets me a little bit choked up.
Yeah, you see him crying as he's walking into, and I mean, thing was like,
yes,
yeah, it was just the whole thing was it was tough, man. And I was actually kind of rooting for it, but I'm like, they're feeding him, and I don't know if I'd say feeding, but they're giving him a guy who's like a buzzsaw. We know that Ribovich is going to stand with him, and that's where I was like, ah, and it's when it started to play out like that, that's when it gets sad, right? Like, it's just, it's tough. Petey, you were at the Chelsea, right? The Chelsea Theater at the Cosmopolitan when he fought Tony Ferguson. I mean, I'll always remember the sound of that fight because it's such a small
room. It's crazy.
Just, yeah. It was just it was like sickening. Like the way they're hitting each other was like, it was like butchers, you know, like just going at like, you know, meat. It was crazy, man. And I'll never forget that. And it just, because at that time I thought Tony Ferguson was like, dude, this guy's a future champ. He's sadistic. He'll do anything to win. And there's Barboza taking his best shots and just returning the fire out. I'll never have more respect than I did for him that night, man. That was awesome.
I think it makes it worse when it's like these guys we know as destroyers. You referenced the Terry Edom knockout on X. Like, that's one of the most violent KOs ever. When you see the lads who used to be the great destructors being destroyed like he was against Ribovic in this fight, I think that makes you a bit emotional too. Like, look, it kind of reminds you of how finite life is, how these careers are, you know? So sad to see Edson go out like that.
I was going to mention, Chuck said the word butcher, Brian Battle winning last week, but that's, you know, we'll talk about that.
That was an exciting fight.
No, that was a big one. You didn't think the butcher was going to lose in Charlotte, did you?
Oh, my God.
Hell no.
See, I want that guy back. It's like, I feel like they're blowing it. But
yeah. Okay. What about Chidian Jokuani defeating Yoel Alvarez? Oof. What the hell happened to Yoel Alvarez? Moving up to 170.
Destroyed so many parlays.
There was a lot of blown up parlays before this, though. I mean, there was so many things going on here. But
thinking like, oh, is there something in the air here? Is Ian going to pull it off because of the upsets? That's probably part of the reason why I was thinking it. But Alvarez, another guy who I thought was on the fast track, and then moving up to 170, it just hasn't, like, Chitty's a good fighter, but it feels like this was designed for Alvarez to win. Minus 365 favorite, plus 290 underdog, and I don't know, just one
his
of
approach
those.
To the fight was bizarre, you know.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. It just
Alvarez should have. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I thought you were talking.
No. Who are you talking to, Ariel? I'm sorry. I was probably a button in.
It was Chuck who said his approach.
Okay. I mean, they pointed out like he was like, where was the MMA portion of it? Like he was just kind of like, let's kickbox, let's stand here and at range, and tag. It was almost like a video game. It was very weird. I was just waiting for something to happen. I guess if he kept this impending for all those three rounds, it was very strange. Like of past performances, I was expecting him to do something. I don't know if he was nursing an injury or something. I didn't hear anything about that, but it just didn't look right. So I'm hoping this isn't like a signal that he's kind of, you know, on the downside here, but because he had so much promise, you know?
Yeah. Surprising. Very surprising. Maybe a move back down to 155 needs to be considered. I don't know. What did you want to say, PT?
I was just saying, I thought Alvarez should have been more of a favorite. When I was looking at it going, wow, I think this line is completely wrong. And then Chitty goes out and does that, so what the fuck do I know?
Especially coming off of, like, you know, bad performance. I was like, he'll rebound in a big way, you know? I don't know.
And he's a so much better grappler. Like he really is. Like that's what was missing, as Chuck said. Like you're like, you can completely change this fight. One successful takedown. Did he even attempt one? I'm not sure if he did.
I don't remember one.
you know what I remember? Everyone's pulling off Scottish twisters these days. All of a sudden, it's like it's like a takedown. Yeah. I'm amazed. Yeah. Charles Johnson pulling off the Scottish
wild
twister against Eduardo Chapelin, who's a fighter of one Daniel Cormier, which is a little bit of a weird thing, but I think DC actually kind of was a little bit quiet.
He did. I noticed that too. Yeah.
In that fight. Charles Johnson, the hair is wild. His fighting style is fun. It was a crazy fight. A very, very fun fight. Flyweight, as much as the women are enjoying a tough time right now, the flyweights, I feel like, are enjoying a moment. I mean, yesterday with Joshua Van and Pantoja, that press conference was incredible. Charles is fun. I don't know if he ultimately ever gets to a title shot position, but he's always going to be like there giving people problems, being in fights, being in fun fights. And that was a very impressive performance. I don't know what to do with
the hair. Should Stevie Ray get a few quid every time someone goes to Scottish Twister? Like, just like music, if you own the royalties to the song and they play it in a film or they play it on the radio, you're getting a bit of a dropsy. You're getting a dropsy. Where's the dropsy for Stevie Ray? Everyone doing his moves all the time. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what's annoying about it? Like the Von Flew choke, you always had to mention Von Flew. Here, why is it called the Scottish Twister? It should be the Stevie Twister or the Ray Twister.
The Stingray.
Stingray. See?
He's got to have his name mentioned. I do agree. It's not fair. Shout out to Charles Johnson. Shout out to the great Stevie Ray. Dante Johnson had an incredible first round win as well. This seems to be someone that the UFC is high on. Said he's never had a proper weight cut in his life. Doesn't need to cut weight. Is just doing it au naturel. And he
never had a proper haircut either.
9-0. What about Trajan Gore? That was unbelievable, right? His teeth missing and all.
Oh my God, that was nasty. They show the tooth. They're like, hey, check it out. Oh my God. Ugh.
Unanimous decision win for Gore over the veteran, Vicente Luque. Lucas Fernando. I know
people are
excited about him. Okay, tell us. Why are you so excited? He defeated Rafael Tobias. Brazil on Brazil crime. What do you think?
This guy's debut. He has Pedro Rizzo in the corner. He's kicking like a fucking mule. So good to watch. Like, do you know one of them kind of elongated executions you get sometimes where you're like, first 30 seconds, you're like, I'm pretty sure I know who's going to win this fight.
I know.
But then he just keeps styling on the dude. Tobias, God love him. I felt sorry for him, but he is a joy to watch this dude. Cannot wait to see him fight more.
Do you remember when John Jones did, like, he took out Stephen Bonner? Like, just was hitting him with everything, spinning things, suplex type.
Just
it was
trying
like
some new shit here.
It was like everything he tried worked. That's what this was. It was like everything that guy did looked beautiful. It was like fluid. It was crisp. It seemed like everything connected. That was a wild fight, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes. Beautiful. Very, very fun. In a weight class, by the way, that, you know, could use a little bit of fun, could use a little bit of excitement. And he had a really nice moment in the post-fight press conference where he talked about thinking that he was going to retire. He lost on Contender Series 3 years ago, and he was telling his wife that he's done. He doesn't think he has it in him anymore. And she's like, no way, you're not gonna do this. He ended up losing his next fight in LFA, and since then he hasn't lost. So a name to keep an eye on at 205 pounds. That's Lucas Fernando. Shout out to Neil Magny. Holy shit. It looked like Neil Magny was going to lose this fight against Ramiz Brahimaj. And then all of a sudden, it was almost like the broadcast was setting it up for Neil to kind of just lose. Like, you know, like, okay, you know, he's just getting up there. By the way, another one where it's like 3 years ago, Neil Magny is fighting Ian Garry on the prelims. Now Ian is fighting for the belt and Neil Magny is all the way at the bottom about to lose an early prelim fight. And then some way, somehow he pulls it off. This dude, almost 40, most wins at 170, inching closer to Jim Miller's record of most wins period in the UFC. Blown away by this guy. I don't know. He's a timeless wonder. Oh, look at this. How embarrassing is that?
Your books.
I knew this was going to happen at some point. I've just been exposed to everyone. You on air, Jordan.
Helwani exposed. UFC 330. So many videos coming our way.
By the way,
no.
I hate to do this to you, Chuck, but speaking of exposed,
your boy,
what do you have to say about Miktabek?
Oh, God.
Oh, shit.
I mean, was he exposed against Jeremiah Wells?
You know what pisses me off, by the way? Like, you're like, can I tell him? I went to you and I said,
oh, yeah.
I want to talk to Earl Bai, you know, and you're like, we'll talk to Uriah, you know, he's the one who handles. So I'm like, all right. I've talked to Uriah in the past, obviously. So I sent him, he's like, hell yeah. That's all he says, hell yeah. And I said, all right, well, give me a
That's
window.
That's exactly that works what I'd expect him to say.
I'm like, give me a window that works for you. And I'll make work, you know. It's like, because the first one was like this long text, like, hey man, I want to do this, blah, blah. Hell yeah. And then nothing, like it just goes radio silent on me. I'm like, what the hell, man? But anyway, now I'm
why
little,
did you tell
I
me
I wanted to talk to him. I really thought that I was the one complaining that he's kicking off this card on the prelims. I'm like, why would they put Oral Bai on? I mean, this dude to me is like, you know,
he's fun.
Like he was fascinating, right? Like he's fascinating. He's winning his fights. He's already beat Hermanson. I mean, he's shown that he can fight. So I was really shocked. He was like the biggest favorite on this card, wasn't he? Like, or at least one of them. And for him to lose like that, damn, dude.
All over now. No more Chuck Mendenhall feature in his.
No, I'm done. You know how I am. They lose once, I'm out.
That is it. Yeah, you were bigging him up all week. I was seeing you bigging him up every chance you could. And
I feel like I'm just destroying these guys' careers whenever I talk about him. Now I can shut up.
Sometimes whenever it seems like you're doing it in jest, but in this one actually seemed like you were legit excited about him.
I was excited. You know, my son loves him. My son was the first one on, like, immediately.
What?
You gotta see this guy. My son, he loves him.
Blaze loves him. Why does he
loves him? Like, from the first, I don't know, he just caught his first UFC fight or whatever, and he's like, dude, you gotta, you know, watch this guy. And, you know, since that time, you pay closer attention, you know. It's just one of those type of things. It's like... Yeah. Shamit, you know, like your kids love Shamit. Now you love Shamit, right? Like, it's like one of those.
Blaze is some deep cuts, though, man. Like Arnold Allen, when nobody was on the hype train, and now Oral Boy. I mean, this is pretty fucking cool. Fair play.
Respect. He knows ball. Yeah. That's what they say, right?
He does. He does. He knows all these.
That was an incredible finish, by the way, for Jeremiah Wells.
That was.
Very weird sequence afterwards.
Very, very.
The gloves, and then says, okay, I'm done. I'm here
That's
in Philly.
Right.
I'm going to retire unless they give me a top 15er. And then, like, which is weird in its own right. And then when he does interviews in the back, he's like, yeah, I'm not actually done. I just really want
to. He's retired
what
from
is that?
Facing shit opponents. He's retired from facing shit opponents. That's what it is. He's like, but, no.
Why do people fuck around like this? It's like, remember when Clay Guida took off his gloves and all that? Yes. And they're like, they ask him and he's like, no, you know, whatever. He just took off his gloves. What a jackass.
Cejudo, famous backfire of a retirement.
Yes. Yes, that's the point. Does he think the UFC would be like, okay, now we get it.
Please,
like,
Jeremiah, please, don't retire. We were just about to inject you into the title picture. What are you doing?
I hope the meta rankings take that into consideration when they're compiling their 15, you know?
God, it's such a weird thing. But that was awkward, but it was a great finish. So let's not take away from the
fair play.
Let's circle back here because things are happening. There's post-fight press conferences and whatnot. I do want to mention that Dean Thomas, who's the head coach for Julian Robertson, announced afterwards that he is retiring from cornering. That's it. He's done.
Wow.
He's been doing a lot of media stuff. He's on the broadcast as sort of like an Eddie Bravo type, if you remember that from way back in the day, would explain things, some judging, some scoring criteria and whatnot. So he announced that he's retiring after leading Jillian Robertson to a title fight. Also on the post show, Islam Makhachev says that he believes Carlos Prachez deserves the next title shot. The quote is, Shavkat is not fighting. Prachez still fighting, still active. Morales also is good, but I don't remember the last time he fought. If you ask the survey, I think Carlos Prachez.
Same night.
Plus, he should be at middleweight anyway. Let's, you know.
Oh, wasn't it's Prachez.
Yes. Mackenzie Dern, by the way, guys, has said that she doesn't feel like she needs to beat Zhang Wei Li to feel like she's the true strawweight champion. I mean, what is she going to say, right, in that case?
Fair play. I disagree. That's all I'm going
to
say.
I mean, Duran Amand didn't need to beat Cyborg. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those types of things.
Dana White is not giving the Islam Makhachev goat talk any more sort of credence. He is saying that it could be undeniable by the time the career is over. This is the quote, just let the guy's career play out. The records he keeps breaking will all speak for themselves. This is not something like he didn't do this
different
with John Jones.
John Jones.
I know what I'm different. Thinking.
Yes. Yeah. He said that calling him the GOAT would already be a no-brainer, but with Makhachev now talking about fighting another 3 or 4 times, Dana wants to see his career fully play out. You could still be the GOAT
left
right
on that
now.
Contract. Yeah. No negotiation in sight for Islam, if that's the kind of talk we're getting, I'd say.
Yeah, locked in.
Locked in.
There's another question about AJ Fury, which has to be like the stupidest storyline in all of combat sports. I did not miss that one, I'll be honest. It seems like there was some type of drama between Morales and Prachez. Nothing big, but they did have a little tete-a-tete in the crowd afterwards. Nothing to really write home about.
I am. It's me. Yeah, actually, yeah.
It was something. Not much craziness there. I'm just scrolling. Clarissa Shields won tonight, so shout out to her. She's a unified champion once again. Just looking at this. By the way,
Joe Saunders very excited about that fight. I saw.
Oh, yes. I saw that as well. Okay, opening lines, Islam Carlos. Who's the favorite?
Oh, come on.
Okay. I know. Okay, more fun. Who is a smaller dog in the opening line, Morales or Prachez?
Morales.
PT? Wow, yeah. Morales. Both of you got it right. Plus 180 Morales, Prachez plus 207.
Wow.
I guess that's kind of like, that's kind of like what you guys were saying, right?
Yeah.
Weren't you saying that?
Yeah. Yes. But I'm surprised. I thought it'd be a little closer than that, but maybe it would be once, you know, the fight gets closer.
When do you expect, do you think he'll fight before Ramadan? Like, what are you thinking, Alwani?
Ramadan. It always kind of changes, but it's around like March, April, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's got to, right?
And he's kind
of August.
The last fight was November. They usually he's good for one a year. He ain't fighting again this year, that's for sure. My guess is after.
Oh man. Then Morales has got to stay busy. Like he's got to fight.
Oh, 100%. Match him with Garrett. Even if it's like an April, May, that will still be a year for Prachez. But yeah, it's a long ass time. It's weird. Dana White did say, by the way, that if he didn't have that lone loss, it would be 100% that he would be the GOAT as of right now.
I thought he wasn't having this conversation.
I'm reading things. No update on Kayla and Valentina just yet. No update on Zhang Wei Li. There were some very exciting things that were announced. Can we mention these things real quick here?
Yeah.
A whole host of things were announced. Okay, like I said, UFC... Okay, well, the first thing that was announced was that Raul Rosas Jr. is going to be fighting Jaime Barcelos on September 26th main event.
Man.
Kind of thought that Raul Rosas would be on the Noche UFC card on September 12th, but he's getting a main event fight on September 26th. You like this, Chuck?
Well, I just see that, you know, Barcelos is kind of like this prospect killer, isn't he? Like, it seems a little, I don't know. It makes sense. I'm happy to see Barcelos get it, but that seems like a risky proposition for Rosas, right? To me.
We'll see. Okay. UFC 333, October 24th, Saturday, Abu Dhabi. That will be one of two numbered events in October. Earlier in the month, we'll have the 332 event in Utah. That would be on the 3rd, I think it is. Yeah, I think it's on the 3rd, if my memory... I'm still on island time here, guys, you know, so, you know, throw up your shakas. Anyway, they didn't announce a main event for that one, but they did announce a significant number of fights for UFC 333. Volkanovski, Movsar Evloev, title fight, main event, obviously for the featherweight title. Piotr Jan Mirabdoulashvili, number 3 for the bantamweight title. Lonnie Kavanaugh against Ramazan Temirov on that card as well. Tremendous. Who was that? PT? Who reacted
like
that?
The game comes at you quickly, doesn't it? Fucking hell.
That's a tough
recap. That is... Fuck me. I mean, Kavanaugh, like, this looks like an amazing prospect, but, like, he is right there after he beats Moreno. He loses once, and we're like, here we go. We're putting you in with the guy who is, like, a human, like, you know, rocket launcher. Let's just put him in with them and see how that goes. It is, you get one fight to do the job they expect you to do in this sport, and then after that, you're fucked. You are absolutely fucked. Unless you can win. And then maybe you get another chance. It's incredible.
Alexander Volkov fighting Rizvan Kuniev. Arnold Allen, Aaron Pico. That's a fun one.
Yeah, that's
I like
fun.
That one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
Dominic Reyes against Azmat Mirzakhanov. GC's guy, Abu Magomedov, fighting Cam Rouston.
Huge.
Nikita Krylov against Abdul Rahman Yakhiev. And Grant Dawson against Nurulo Aliyev.
Faded off a bit there towards the end, but, you know, strong.
Yeah,
it was a strong card. They did give us the whole lineup for the 331 card. That's September 19th. I cannot wait for that. Van Pantoja 2. That is going to be an unbelievable night. That is a really good pay-per-view card. Van Pantoja 2 and Armin Tsarukyan against Mauricio Hoofy, even though it's not the fight that we want Tsarukyan to be fighting in. Was there another fight that was announced? Oh, yeah, Sean Brady against Gabriel Bonfim. I like that one. November 7th.
Great. Yeah.
At the newly renovated Apex.
By the way, can I just say, I know it's the, you know, en vogue thing to do, but it is actually quite different now. Like
$25 for a ticket, mate.
No, I'm just saying, like, the atmosphere, even the way it looks with the crowd, it does feel significantly better.
Yeah, you Max can't Kellerman tell.
Raving about it.
Yeah, you can't tell actually on a lot of those shots. You can't tell that they're in the Apex anymore. That's a big plus. And I mean, there was ambient noise now. So it was like, it was good. And I thought the lighting was dialed in. So, I mean, it was a lot better, I thought.
Yeah. I think it's, I mean, just to hear a pop when something big happens, it's a little like the old Hard Rock or the Palms, one of those two back in the day. So I don't hate it. I don't love it. Don't hate it. Sean Brady should have been fighting on this freaking card. He is like...
Yeah, it's so true.
Is he not the most famous Philadelphia fighter right now? Or him or Joe Pyfer? Joe Pyfer wasn't even on the damn card as well. So weird. But they didn't need either of them because...
Asked about
that? No, I didn't.
Dana was asked about the press conference. There must have been a local journalist. Like, is there any way, like, was it difficult to get more Philly guys on the card, or what happened here? I think he was told it was a stupid fucking question or something, and he moved on to the next thing.
Oh, he just ignored it?
A stupid fucking question.
Stupid fucking, something like that, yeah. I hate these fucking questions or something to that end. A classic Dana. Anyway, yeah.
He doesn't seem to like any of them. $6.7 million gate, over 19,000 fans in attendance. The last time they were in Philadelphia back in 2019, $1.1 million gate, 11,000 fans in attendance. So what a massive jump. That was pre-pandemic, of course. By the way, way back in the day, UFC 101, $3.55 million gate. And then UFC 133, headlined by, who remembers?
Rashad.
And?
Ortiz, wasn't it?
Yes. 1.5 for that one.
Don't get mad, PT. Hate the game.
I was impressed. I was impressed. So cool.
As we round third here, PT, let me just ask you, final thought on Ian. Do you think he won fans? Do you think he has won people over by his performance, by the mic, you know, work afterwards, what he said, all that stuff? Or is it always going to be F you, Gary?
I don't think anyone kind of doesn't think he's a brilliant fighter, you know? I just think it's something about him that people don't like. He gives them ammunition to supply the feelings that they already have. And I think they're already entrenched in those camps. I don't think anyone's disputing that he's a brilliant fighter. I don't know how you could after the fights he's put on. He is absolutely fantastic. It's just, you know, he always set out that, like, you know, he says, I have this dream and my dream is about to happen. And, you know, he'll say now that the dream was to be a world champion. But initially, the dream was for an Irish Invasion Part 2 to be the best on the mic. He used to say all this kind of stuff to you when he came into the UFC first. I think that part of it probably won't happen. I don't think he's going to have a whole country behind him. I don't think he's going to be adored as the greatest microphone machismo in the UFC ever. But I think he can definitely be a champion. And I think that would be a hell of an achievement for him and for Irish MMA.
Yeah, I would like to think, based on the performance, based on how he handled himself all week long, I would like to think that people are going to start backing him and supporting him. I'm curious. I think it might be one of those things that it will take some time. But he's a great fighter. I don't get it.
Brilliant.
Like, what? He doesn't,
you know what it is. It's like you're sitting at a poker table.
Yeah.
All the dudes are around the poker table are smoking cigars and drinking whiskey, and he's like, guys, check it out. This is my girl, you know, or, and this is, you know, whatever. And he's like, he's that guy. That's what it is. I feel like it's got to be that. Like, it's got to be part of it. Like, there's something
with problem?
This demographic.
He loves his wife. He's
this,
like, demographic, I
know, but this demographic, like, Chael pointed this out too. He's like, Definitive's wife. I don't understand what's going on, but I feel like this demographic just hates this kind of thing. I don't know why, but they do, you know?
I had someone reach out to me, just like a friend who's an MMA fan, and she said, oh, I hope Islam kills Ian. And I said, why? and also, by the way, isn't it amazing? Like, we're in Philadelphia and Islam, the Russian, is getting cheered. Like, let's go Islam, which, you know, just speaks to how popular he is and also just, you know, how interesting the sport is and the fan base. But what I said to her was like, okay, I get it. You may think he's inauthentic. You may think that he sometimes tries too hard, this and that. But you know what? We need Ian Garys in this sport because Ian Gary makes us feel something, good or bad. Mm-hmm. I think he is someone who elicits emotion, and a lot of it right now is negative. People want to see him.
And he put
stumble.
Islam over too, right?
Yes. I just think, like, give me more Ian. Give me more Ian Gary types, right? Like, we need those characters. There's a lot
Dude
of...
Dude never says no to anybody. It's like, it's crazy. I mean, they should love him, but...
Yeah,
I don't think he's happy that it's working the way it is. It works in that when this guy gets interviewed, everybody wants to watch it, but not for the reason that we usually watch an interview. You know what I mean?
I know.
I agree with you.
I'm not saying it was a grand slam, by the way. Like, he shouldn't be up there being like, hey, guys, let's keep it to the fighting. Like, no, man, it's fight. Like, people are going to ask you questions. And let's be honest, like, you're not up there, you know, talking to, you know, the 90s Yankees beat writer crew. Like, they're not going to hit you with the hard stuff, like, with all due respect. So he doesn't have to put that out there. But when he puts that out there, it does make people think, like, well, what are you hiding? Or what are you ashamed of? Or what don't you want to talk about? And so I just think that
it's also stuff he's brought up, right? Like, it's also stuff they're asking about things he said most of the time. Like,
yeah,
that's the reality of the situation. Like, it's kind of like, they talk about controlling the narrative, but the things that people are feasting on are all stuff they've offered up themselves. So I don't really understand, like, oh, let's not do this, when a lot of the time it's stuff that Ian or his team have brought to the forefront themselves.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, but ultimately I think that the MMA fans are most attracted to the ones who they feel like are the most authentic, right? And I know that's like a very simplistic way of putting it, but they look at the guys that they've always loved, the Diaz brothers being the perfect example. Like, they just feel like they are who they are and they love them for that. And when they feel like you're trying too hard, or when you're trying to put on an act, or trying to be someone who you're not, all that stuff, they just, and then there's a woman involved in all this, and it just gets a little bit weird. It's just a weird thing. Like, you see the tweets, it's all very weird. Anyway, let's see how he bounces back. You can't deny the fact. You may not like him as a person. You cannot deny the fact that he is an unbelievable fighter. And let's be honest, probably succeeded like a hell of a lot more than most people thought when he came into the UFC. I think a lot of people thought like, oh, this guy's going to get, you know, weeded out. And that has not happened. And he's got two losses now. And one is to Shavkat and the other is to Islam. So not too bad. Chuck, any final thoughts?
I wanted to point out, but I've got an obstructed view at the new Highmark. No, I'm just kidding. What do you think of the stadium? I wanted to know what you thought of the stadium.
At first, I was like, where are we going with this?
I slaughtered that. But like, I wanted to know what you thought of the new stadium.
Well, first of all, I don't know if you've seen
all the criticism that's been.
Oh, yes, I've seen it all.
Okay. All right.
I have an algorithm that feeds me, you know, mainly Knicks, MMA, and.
Is this new stadium the Ian Gary of the NFL at the moment? Is that what you're saying?
No. It's, you know what it is? It's the internet thinking. It's like. Some, you know, Pat McAfee puts out an album. The internet is now going to decide that they're going to try to take him down. Our friend Adeola Depo has a bit of a kumsa hot take about George Foreman. God bless you, Ade. The internet decides we're going to take him down. So here's this new, you know, beautiful stadium in Buffalo. The internet decides we're going to take it down. That's just what they do. All to say, the new jerseys or the alternate jerseys are sublime. They're the most beautiful jerseys I've ever seen.
Fucking gray ones?
Oh, the gray ones are class. Are you kidding me? Yeah. They're class. The gray joints with the thing here, they're phenomenal.
They're gray joints. By the way,
the fact that that Josh and the squad wore those for the first game, I thought was amazing. I thought it was a touch of class. It was really so great. Like who would want to see them wear the old red helmets? You know, it was great. We won today. We beat Carolina. Keon Coleman gets a touchdown. First catch, beautiful. DJ Moore, tremendous. There's nothing to complain. And so those photos, I actually am friends with some of the Bills, you know, staffers. I have confirmed doctored, Photoshopped, AI'd, ChatGPT'd. So much ado about nothing. I have been invited. You know, maybe to do the ceremonial coin toss for the opening game against Detroit. But
no way.
You know, I feel like, no, I have not been invited.
Is that the first game? That's a great game. Detroit Bills is the first game.
Yes, it has.
Oh, that's a great game.
It is that game.
Pizza, I'm reading. Look at Christmas Day and tell me who the game. That's going to be a good one.
Oh.
Christmas Day.
Who is Christmas Day?
That's a big
one. I haven't seen the schedule.
Buffalo comes to town, you know.
Buffalo, oh shit. Denver part two, the rematch. hopefully your boy, you know, and his foot all good? Is the foot all good?
I mean, they're saying it. He didn't play in the first preseason, but we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
By the way,
I'm Bills, praying.
Those are must-see TV. We got Thanksgiving and Christmas. Unprecedented.
Look at that.
Unprecedented.
If you get two titles in 1 year, man, after all everything you, I mean, this is not gonna, this be.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
You can reverse Ariel him then. You can be like, I just don't want to hear it. You've won them both now.
I know. Hey, no more. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Chuck, I believe now more than ever because I witnessed it. Yeah. I wish you could talk to my kids right now. All I did, I brought three books. I brought all these things that I wanted to do. All I did on this trip was sit and watch old clips from the past 2 months. I can recite verbatim Mike Breen's closing 5-minute essay at the end of the broadcast. 53 years is a long time to wait, especially when you've been wanting and waiting for something for so bad. I could recite it verbatim because I've watched it so many times. I can't get enough. Damn. So all to say, I am going to be insufferable. We're going to do it. And by the way, February 14th, the first time ever that the Super Bowl is played on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
What is it? 5 million. No, there's probably more than 5 million Bills fans out there, right? What would you say? 10 million? How many Bills fans are there? Forget it.
A generation. Some between those numbers, I think.
A generation of broken hearts.
Dude, there's a ton of them in my town. I'll tell you that. We got Bills flags.
Valentine's Day. Wouldn't that be perfect? Wouldn't that be perfect? It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
You got it all planned out.
Deloitte with that, Ariel. What are we doing for Valentine's Day, honey? Listen.
Christmas, too. Christmas, Thanksgiving, all the holidays. They're taken. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm Jewish. Christmas. And by the way, what a day for me, by the way. Knicks Spurs.
You've been gone so long,
Day.
I forgot you're Jewish. This whole...
What? Hang on a second.
Oh,
there it
man.
Is, boys. Is this our first time doing a show since the Knicks are champs?
I think, did we do one? No, I appeared on your show. That's what it was. I appeared on the Monday. I talked to you about it there. This is the first time together doing it. Yeah, you're right.
Sorry,
that's cool.
Sorry.
Hey, man.
Hey, is he going to do this
still,
with every garment
I've still
he
got
has?
It in
because...
me. I've still got it in me. I still have a victory lap going of my own, and it's been 3 years, you know? So
I know.
You're going to have it for a while.
You know, I was talking about that. What happens? Like opening tip, like, do... Can I stop being annoying? Like, when do I stop being defending champ? Like, right now, I'm still the defending champ.
I think this is good. I think you're the whole year until someone claims the trophy. That's when you stop.
Okay. I just want to know. I'll be there. I'll be there opening
night.
We'll
see if you stop that tune midway through the season, PZ. I don't know. I don't know if I have the stamina, but we'll try it. We'll see. Just keep doing it.
All right.
They have to put every T-shirt he's bought. Like, I mean, it's good. Gonna be like 5 minutes of every episode him just holding up another T-shirt because he bought thousands. It's a real issue.
He's posted like a ton of shit already.
Oh yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. You have crazy. No idea. Well, let me just show you guys something real quick. I have it right here. I just got this.
What'd you do if he pulled a book off that shelf?
This is the newest edition.
What? My whole life is a lie.
Oh, that is something right there.
Oh man.
For fuck's sake.
That is something. Got what? Nice with the guy. That's
signed,
my boy.
Beauty.
By the way, I didn't buy it. This was.
Oh, that's the one you got signed in person?
Yeah, come on.
Oh, dude.
At the Garden, right?
Yeah, at the Garden. All right. Now that I'm breaking out the memorabilia, it's probably time to go. I'm fresh as a daisy right now. I'm on island time, guys. I'm sorry. You know, that's how they do
it.
Yeah,
it's 7 a.m. here. This is good.
I got some poke waiting for me downstairs. It's going to be phenomenal.
Okay. Like happy hour in Hawaii right now.
Yeah. Oh my god. By the way, it took me like 8 days to figure out that they're 6 hours behind us, not five.
I thought it was five this whole time.
Six. I was loving texting PT. PT's waking up. I'm going to bed. I'm like, how is it? How is tomorrow? Is it all right?
He was fascinated by this. He was genuinely.
Wait. So you're telling me it's 7 o'clock there? A.M.?
7 a.m. What? 7 a.m. A.m. A.m.
Wow. Yes. All right, guys. So good to be back. Thank you to the whole squad back in New York. They probably want to kill us. Hang loose. Throw up the shakas. Thank you so much to GC and Rick. Tremendous job with the watch party. Tremendous. Thank you to Kalshi as well for their support. We are back Monday. We have a lot of exciting things. We have a full lineup of guests already booked for all of you and much more to come as well. So the hiatus, the summer break, it is all over. Your long international nightmare is over. Much love, peace and love. Congratulations to Islam Khachev, Mackenzie Dern, and all the big winners tonight. For PT, for Chuck, I am Ariel. Thank you so much for watching. We shall talk to you on Monday.